Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1872 with a release date of June 28th, 2013 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Rules changes are sought to allow encrypted ham radio communications in limited instances. The Consumer Electronics Association is forming a standards group to reduce distracted driving. 5 megahertz privileges come to Samoa. ARIES responds to Alberta, Canada flooding. The FCC sets RF exposure comment deadline. And Amateur Radio Newsline announces its 2013 Young Ham of the Year. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1872, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first and only independent, on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from near Houston, Texas, here is Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
The FCC is inviting public comments on a proposal from a Massachusetts ham to amend the Part 97 amateur service rules. This to permit the encryption of certain amateur communications during emergency operations or related training exercises. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, has the details.
On June 7th, the FCC accepted for filing a petition for rulemaking from Don Rolfe, AB1PH, designated as RM-11699, and put it on public notice. In it, Rolfe suggests that an additional exception to Part 97.113 be made to permit encrypted communications when hams are participating in emergency services operations or related training exercises which may involve information covered by medical privacy requirements or other sensitive data. This could include logistical information concerning medical supplies, personnel movement, or any other data designated by federal authorities managing relief or training efforts. As you are likely aware, FCC Rule 97.113 right now prohibits hams from transmitting messages encoded for the purpose of obscuring their meaning. Rolfe's rulemaking petition says that this restriction has impacted the relationship of amateur radio volunteers and served agencies. Also, that it has significantly limited the effectiveness of amateurs in supporting emergency communications where secured communications is required. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
In making his request, Rolfe notes that there already exists precedent for this exemption. He notes that Part 97 already relaxes its encryption prohibitions with respect to satellite control link communications and model craft radio control. The deadline for filing comments on RM-11699 is July 8th. Ham radio operators and other interested parties have until September 3rd to file comments on an FCC proceeding to reassess the limits and policies governing exposure to radio frequency electromagnetic fields. As previously reported, the FCC released a first report and order, further notice of proposed rulemaking, and notice of inquiry in ET dockets 13-84 and 03-137 on March 27th. They were published in the Federal Register June 4th, starting the clock on the commentary period. While the FCC proposals do not alter existing RF exposure limits, they do call for the elimination of existing special evaluation ham radio exemptions as outlined in Section 97.13, Paragraph C, of the Commission's rules. According to the ARRL letter, the League plans to submit comments on this issue over summer. The Commission will also accept reply comments filed after September 3rd and continuing through November 1st. Other minor rules changes adopted in the report and order section of the document take effect on August 5th. Amateur radio emergency service operations in the Canadian province of Alberta stood down on Monday, June 24th. This after being called out several days earlier when severe flooding hit that area. According to a news release by Curtis Bijulak, VE6AEW, ARES will remain on standby during the recovery process in the event of a communication failure. Also, a temporary link put in place between the provincial linking system and the VE6HAT repeater will remain in place until recovery operations are complete. During the height of the call-out, VE2MBS reported that emergency nets were operational on 7.135 and 3.675 MHz in support of communications for the floods. Unfortunately, both suffered some level of interference from field day stations that were unaware of their operations. Alberta Premier Alison Redford has promised that the province will help flood victims put their lives back together and provide financial aid to communities that need to rebuild. Officials in the city of Roseville, California, are so aware of the importance of amateur radio for emergency communications that the ham community was invited to be a part of a recent emergency preparedness drill. According to news reports, a dozen agencies gathered in Placer County on Tuesday, June 11th, for a mock tornado drill. The exercise emphasized skilled and reliable communication, and because of this, the city brought in a group of local hams from the Placer County Amateur Radio Services to assist. It was noted that amateur radio was a tool used during and after the recent tornadoes in Oklahoma. Roseville city officials say an F3 tornado hit the Sacramento Valley in the last 50 years, so the potential for a large natural disaster of that sort remains. More is online at tinyurl.com/Roseville-tornado-drill. The Consumer Electronics Association is forming a standards group to reduce distracted driving, which results from the use of consumer electronics products in a mobile environment. The association's Portable, Handheld, and In-Vehicle Electronics Committee recently approved the formation of the Driver Device Interface Working Group. It will provide recommendations on portable and handheld devices, as well as other consumer electronics products used in private and commercial vehicles, boats, and aircraft. Whether or not a representative of the amateur radio community will be invited to serve on this committee, or how its findings might affect the future design of portable and mobile ham radio gear, are both unknown as we go to air. You can read more online at tinyurl.com/distracted-driving-committee. Atsuo Sakuma 5W1SA has become the first resident operator on the island of Samoa to be issued special permission to operate 5 megahertz. This as the Samoan Office of the Regulator says that he can operate from 5.250 to 5.450 megahertz. Although 60-meter operating permits have been available to visitors since 2011, these had generally been for the 5 United States allocated channels only. Several sources are reporting that DL2NUD and PE1L will be involved in a moon bounce operation from Wawanda through July 7th. Their main interest will be for EME contacts on the 144, 432, 1296, and 2304 megahertz bands. The team also expects to be on the high-frequency bands and 6 meters as well. The call signs mentioned for this operation are 9X0EME, 9X0HP, 9X0L, and 9X0MB. QSL all via PE1L. For more information and updates, keep an eye on www.emelogger.com/Rwanda. Some breaking news courtesy of the Ohio Penn DX newsletter. Look for 17 operators to be active as 6M6M from South Korea through July 31st. As you might have guessed from their call sign, this will be a 6-meter-only operation with 4 high-power stations using Yagi's and quad antennas. Modes mentioned include CW, SSB, FM, several digital, and even good old AM. They will operate mainly from the Korean mainland, but there is the possibility of a trip to several islands on the air groups. QSL this special operation via HL2UVH. And we will have more DX news later on in this week's report. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W3UU repeater serving Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. A 16-year-old extra-class amateur from Bloomington, Indiana, has been selected as the 2013 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year. Mark Abramovich, NT3V, is here with the details.
I'm not sure what to think. I'm happy.
And that's how it sounded when Padrigli Sandru, KC9UUS, heard the news he had been selected the Young Ham of the Year. He conceded he had heard what he called rumors that he was being nominated for something, but it didn't sink in until getting the call from our Newsline headquarters that he might be recognized for his achievements. Lissandreau was born in Illinois, but has family in Cyprus. He says his interest in ham radio was actually sparked by his mom, Carolyn, KC9URR, who was a pretty serious shortwave radio listener. His father is Plato, and he has two sisters, Helena, who's 17, and Maria, 14.
When I was little, I used to collect stamps, and so my mom would show me all the letters and all the stuff that she got back from shortwave stations with all these intricate stamps. And so I saw those, and I wanted to get interested in, you know, doing radio. So I got into shortwave. And then the interest grew bigger, and it wasn't just about stamps anymore. And so I got interested in ham. I contacted Neil Rapp at my high school. And I joined the club.
Neil Rapp is WB9VPG, who teaches chemistry at Bloomington High School South, and met Padraig in class. It was Rapp who invited him to join the school's amateur radio club. Rapp co-nominated Padraig for the Amateur Radio Newsline Award, along with Dr. Scott Wright, K0MD, who has taken part in de-expeditions himself from Turks and Caicos, Chile, and China. It was Rapp who introduced Lissandreau to a whole new world. And Lissandreau, who just turned 16, says it didn't take him long to climb the license ladder.
I got all three licenses in 3 months. And then I became president of my amateur radio club at school.
His technician was earned in October 2011, general in December 2011, and extra in January 2012. Lissandreau says participation in the school club roundup and the program on the Peter Island de-expedition really sparked his interest in DX.
I decided to lead my own little expedition, de-expedition to Cyprus. I brought buddy pole, which you can, you know, change for the bands, but generally just use it on touring gear. I brought the Yaesu FT897, got some coax, step-down transformer, batteries, the whole shebang, and my mom and I transmitted in Cyprus, and then I decided to write, and I just thought it would be cool to write an article for Curiosity.
That was last summer, and the article, A Crazy Idea, A De-Expedition to Cyprus, was accepted and published as the QST cover story in this past May's edition.
I transmitted on two different mountain regions. I transmitted on a couple different beaches. I transmitted in hotels, yes. I transmitted on the top of this house by the beach that someone let us borrow. I transmitted really anywhere I could. And I seemed to, you know, get pretty good propagation.
So what did Lissandreau set out to do with this 5BD expedition? Contacts from the other side of the world and fun.
I got people from England all the way through Scandinavia to Russia, all the way down, you know, Bulgaria and Dubai. So I tried to talk as much as I possible and, you know, meet these people. So I took it slow. I didn't try to get, you know, a million contacts.
He estimates it was slightly more than 100, actually, and his mom was making some as well. Word of his de-expedition spread before the article was published, and Lissandreau says he was invited to be a presenter at the Dayton Hamvention Youth Forum this past May, run by Carol Perry, WB2MGP.
To meet other 16-year-olds who are extras and who read my article and are really excited to meet me is also really cool. Sort of a role model, and I would like to continue to be one.
Lissandreau was selected by Indiana Section Manager Lou Everett, WA5LOU, as an Assistant Section Manager for Youth. His interests vary from 4-H to electronics, from music to robotics, and yes, he's even played in Carnegie Hall. But back home in Indiana,
I've been designing circuits and messing around with a bunch of high voltage circuits and transformer drivers and all sorts of stuff just to fuel my interest between, you know, amateur radio, electronics, and chemistry.
It was an easy selection for the judges. We here at Amateur Radio Newsline are proud to have Padraig Lissandreau, KC9UUS, join our distinguished honor roll as the 2013 Young Ham of the Year. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V, in Philadelphia.
Padraig Lissandreau, KC9UUS, will receive the Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award at a ceremony to be held in his honor on Saturday, August 17th at the Huntsville Ham Fest in Huntsville, Alabama. The Young Ham of the Year Award was created by the Amateur Radio Newsline with corporate sponsorship from Yaesu USA, CQ Publishing, and Heil Sound. Listeners to KVTK AM of Yankton, South Dakota, were recently without the station for a few days. This is because an accident caused the station's broadcast tower to fall to the ground. The tower, which was 309 feet tall, was situated in the middle of what was described as a small grassy field located about 5 miles west of the town of Vermilion. Reportedly, a man cutting the grass Monday afternoon, June 10th, clipped one of the tower's guy wires, causing it to collapse shortly after 4 p.m. local time. Engineers and other staffers of Five Star Communications, which also owns KVHT-FM, reportedly worked quickly to find the best way to begin broadcasting again after their tower collapsed. According to press reports, the station was back in operation from a temporary site on Friday, June 14th. A small building located a short distance from the tower's base was not damaged, as the collapsing metal snaked its way around the structure without striking it. Thankfully, no one was injured in the mishap. Some good news for United States broadcasters concerned about service to their dielectric brand broadcast towers and antennas. This with word that the Sinclair Broadcast Group has announced the purchase of dielectric from SPX Corporation. According to Sinclair President and CEO David Smith, dielectric has supplied more than two-thirds of the TV industry's high-power antennas, and its name is synonymous with expert engineering and quality products. Smith added that should a spectrum repack occur, dielectric will be there to support that effort. Gary Cavell is with the technical consulting firm Cavell Mertz. He says that the anticipated upcoming repack of broadcast outlets in the face of spectrum reallocation to broadband might prove to be impossible to accomplish in a 3-year period without dielectric. Chris Moulding, G4HYG, says that he has just released a new APRS app for Android phones and tablets. This so that radio amateurs can send APRS position beacons and messages from an Android-equipped phone or tablet over a 3G or Wi-Fi link to the APRS IS internet system. It can also link by Bluetooth to the new Bluetooth version of the APRS TNC DigiTracker. G4HYG notes that there is a small charge for the app to help pay for the development tool licensing fee. More information on the web at tinyurl.com/APRS-Android-app. Patrick Stoddard, WD9EWK, has been named as AMSAT's new Director of Field Operations. In his new capacity, Stoddard is responsible for managing AMSAT's core of area coordinators who represent AMSAT in their local areas. For those not aware, area coordinators serve as the ambassadors of AMSAT. Their responsibilities include such activities as manning an AMSAT booth at hamfests, giving local or regional club presentations on AMSAT and satellite operations. They also serve as elmers to those looking for information about operating through satellites. Area coordinators are also known to establish local nets and assist with field day satellite activities. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. It is with deep sorrow that we report the passing of Amateur Radio Newsline anchor and reporter Don Carlson, KQ6FM, on Friday morning, June 21st, from complications to pancreatic cancer. A lifelong broadcaster by profession, during his career, Don, at times using the stage name Don Murray, worked at numerous radio stations throughout California and Nevada. His favorite jobs were hosting oldies, rock and roll, or jazz shows. Don also owned a voice talent company called The Voice Shop. From there, he provided commercials and other announcements for numerous radio and television stations across the United States. This included several national spots about ham radio that he produced for the ARRL. In the world of ham radio, Don's activities included ARRL appointments in California, Nevada, and at the national level. In Nevada, he served as District Emergency Coordinator for the Northwest District, Assistant Section Emergency Coordinator, Section Emergency Coordinator, and Public Information Coordinator. His most recent position was as Assistant Section Manager. KQ6FM was also a member of the ARRL's National Public Relations Committee. While there, One of his greatest achievements was helping to create the Public Information Officer's Swiss Army Knife Guide and its associated training program. Don's passion for ARES and emergency service in general led him to become the voice of the annual MCOM West Emergency Communications Ham Radio Gathering. Don not only emceed the event when it was held in Reno, but also supported the convention by serving on the board of directors. In recognition of his many contributions to ham radio, in 2010 he was named as the ARRL Pacific Division Ham of the Year, with the award presented to him at that year's PacificCon convention. Don Carlson, KQ6FM, is survived by his wife Judy and son Andrew. A celebration of life ceremony for Don was to be held on Saturday, June 29th at Sierra Bible Church in Reno, Nevada. In lieu of flowers, Judy Carlson asks that donations be made to a church or other charitable institution of your choice to help someone less fortunate than yourself. A pair of California hams are claiming a new world distance record on the 77 to 81 gigahertz or 3.7 millimeter band. The asserted new record was set June 13th between Robert Johnson, KF6KVG, and Goran Popovic, AD6IW. The two achieved a distance of 252.49 kilometers, with one operating from Mount Hamilton in Grid Square CM97, and the other located at Kings Canyon National Park, located in Grid DM06. KF6KVG used a one-foot parabolic dish, while the one used at AD6IW was twice the size. Both stations employed what are known as dielectric resonator oscillator locked frequency controls for extreme stability. Jim Linton, VK3PC, tells Amateur Radio Newsline that International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend continues to grow. In fact, it seems to have become the biggest and arguably the world's first fun-filled event for portable amateur radio stations that takes place in the month of August. According to VK3PC, the event continues to promote public awareness of the old marine navigation and the need for preservation and restoration of these facilities. It also promotes amateur radio and fosters international goodwill. Now in its 16th year, International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend will be held August 17th and 18th. So far, some 285 registered sites representing more than 30 countries are on board. For more details, please visit the website www.illw.net. An update on amateur radio on the International Space Station, or ARIS, program, given by Frank Bauer, KA3HDO, at the recent Dayton Hamvention, can now be viewed on the web. In his presentation, Bauer discusses a number of changes at NASA that are affecting the ARIS manned ham radio in space program. He also takes a look back at the past 30 years of amateur radio on the space shuttle and now the International Space Station. You will find the 23-minute, 30-seconds presentation online at tinyurl.com/ARIS-Dayton-update. On the air, the city of Władysław Owo, Poland, will be celebrating its 50th anniversary this summer. To commemorate the event, local amateurs are celebrating using the call sign HF50WLA until the 21st of July. If you make contact, please QSL via SP2YWL direct or electronically via Logbook of the World. In DX, word that HA1YA will be operational from Thasos Island from July 5th to the 13th as SW8EA. He will be active on the HF, VHF, UHF bands using CW and SSB. If you make contact, please QSL via his home call. DL5YL and DL5YM will be operating /HB0 from Liechtenstein through early July. No bands or operating times have been mentioned. QSL via their home call signs. RU0ZM will be in the village Kamenka in Asiatic Russia until November, operating /0. He will be running 100 watts into a two-element beam on 20 and 15 meters and a Windom antenna for other bands. QSL via UA0ZC, direct only. OZ1DJJ will be on the air from Amasalik Island from July 20th to August 1st, operating as OX3LX. He will be active on high-frequency bands, plus 6 and 4 meters. Modes to be used were not announced. QSL via OZ1 PIF. Lastly, members from the Spanish Aitana DX group will be on the air from the YN2N Radio Shack in Nicaragua between October 1st to the 16th. Operations will be on 160 through 6 meters using CW and SSB. QSL via EB7DX, either direct or by the Bureau. And finally this week, a kind of rhetorical scientific question. Can our home planet survive a super coronal mass ejection from our home star if it was hurled directly at us? While opinions among researchers are divided, at least some in South Africa believe it would not be good news. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD, takes a close look at what these scientists believe might happen.
Our sun is a yellow star that consists of a giant ball of superheated plasma. Its magnetic field oscillates and acts as a dynamo that creates sunspots, solar flares, and strong magnetic storms in the solar system. When a coronal mass ejection, or CME, is spewed from the corona of the sun and travels to the Earth, the magnetic field of our planet generally deflects it, and in the process creates auroras around the magnetic poles. But a report published by the South African Radio League notes that some scientists claim that if a super CME should hit Earth, then this level of magnetic storm could penetrate the planet's magnetic field and cause devastation. First of all, the satellites on orbit would be destroyed. This would mean that all satellite telecommunications and direct satellite TV would go off the air. On the ground, such a CME could also generate extremely high voltages in the power lines and destroy most, if not all, of the transformers in the substations. This would likely cause complete blackouts in cities and towns. Since water pumps won't function, municipalities worldwide dependent on pumped-in delivery might quickly dry up. According to the report, scientists are currently keeping a very close eye on the sun with a dedicated satellite known as the Solar and Heliospheric Observatory. At the same time, they are trying to develop some form of shielding that could protect electrical transformers and other electronics during such an event. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD, in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
A massive solar storm that hit Earth in March of 1989 caused blackouts in the entire province of Quebec, Canada. That power disruption also closed schools and businesses, kept the Montreal Metro shut down during the morning rush hour, and closed Dorval Airport. You can read more about it, courtesy of NASA, at tinyurl.com/giant-1989-CME. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, near Houston, Texas, saying 7-3, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013, all rights reserved.